Good morning, everybody. Tim Horan, the communications, digital infrastructure and satellite analyst now here at Oppenheimer. My pleasure to be hosting Amdocs again, I think for maybe the fifth year. And I've hosted probably Anthony, the group president of Amdocs, much more often than that, actually. Anthony, I will always mess up your last name, but we're good with Anthony for now. Yeah, and Matt Smith, head of
Perfect.
IR, is here also. It's just really, I think, fascinating times in technology and networks and compute, clearly in the economy. We just think we're on the precipice of incredible changes to the economy with this AI general purpose technology. And really, I think it puts Amdocs in an incredibly strong position to help the industry adopt AI, both from new services and also to digitize the businesses a hell of a lot more. But Anthony, before we get into all that, so I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Can you just describe a little bit more what you focus on day to day as group president?
Sure. So, we're obviously in the middle of no, middle. We've had it seems like we're in the middle, but 3 months ago we transitioned to Shimi as the CEO, and we've really been focusing, I would say, on just realigning our vision and our strategy in terms of kind of where we want to focus on, how we want to drive the company for, not the next quarter, but the next year, the next 3 years, the next 5 years. Really grabbing all of this, I would say, convergence of technology from connectivity to AI to cloud acceleration to the edge to all these technologies are kind of like on a convergence path, which is great. And really delivering value, right? While at the same time also trying to balance the cost implications for our customers, because obviously they're huge, big customers as they scale. So we're kind of right in the middle of these, having very, very interesting dialogues with our customers while trying to set the roadmap for the company. So, it's a lot of fun times. I think we've been working literally 7 days a week. So I always say, you need to be worried when you're bored, and there's never a boring moment in Amdocs.
And you got to work hard when you get new bosses. And good luck. So can you give us any more color on the strategic review? Where you guys think you should be doing as a company and competing, and maybe just at a high level, what other products do you need yourself?
Sure. So, as we kind of shared in our earnings, our strategy, very simplistically to put it, is kind of these three pillars with a horizontal pillar at the bottom. And the first pillar is really what we call our agentic transformation pillar, which is really focusing on telecommunications, our BSS, OSS. Really coming to the market with the next generation agentic platform, keep doubling down on that. We have a North Star of we believe that, eventually it is really going to be business to machines, right? Meaning you this kind of massive layer of doing a lot of IT and doing a lot of change requests and things like that is kind of going to disappear as software starts to kind of auto heal and evolve and be more agentic and be able to give you all of these capabilities. And we're starting to push some of those boundaries. And that is really pillar one, just taking our customers to the next evolution of software, which is natively agentically built. The second pillar is we believe that we have this DNA of going deep vertically, right? We are not a company that, serves 17 horizontallys, inch deep, mile wide. And we have some DNA in that, right? We build mission critical software that needs to run 24/7. We work and build software that works in a highly regulatory industry. We are super focused on things like PII and privacy, and obviously with quantum just around the corner with security, we're already working on that stuff. So there are some DNA and characteristics of Amdocs going very deep in these complex verticals that we think can be replicated to another vertical. And so even though we haven't shared specific information on that in terms of the vertical, we think that our next play is to go to another vertical that has similar characteristics and bring to bear kind of this core competency from the agentic side of telco to another vertical. And the third pillar is really something that I'm super, super excited about. And I think there are a lot of very interesting emerging markets, not geographically, but emerging markets from a kind of landscape perspective, where there are a lot of things that we're building that could be viable for. So, just we were talking just before this, right? I spent the day over here at NVIDIA, and we spent a lot of time talking about the edge and talking about edge mesh grid and how that can work and how workloads can balance, tokenization. How do you kind of measure that? Balancing all of that together, because that could be the next frontier as we start to go to all sorts of. By the way, it's not just that you need lower latency and better capabilities on the edge, and there's a great opportunity for telcos to create this mesh grid on the edge, but there is also available compute power, right? Like if you look at the need for the next 3 to 5 years, although there's these massive data center build out being done, they're still behind the curve in terms of the need for many of the enterprises. And here you have fully air conditioned, power supplied, fiber running, all of these edge points close to enterprises and consumers that can be utilized. But that also comes with a burden of how do you manage the workloads, how do you monetize it, how do you treat it differently, how do you treat security on it, how do you partition it, how do you virtualize it. So there's very interesting stack of software complexities, and that's kind of some of the big items we've been sitting here talking with NVIDIA in the last day or two. So that third pillar is very, very interesting and exciting for us. And we're building some of this stuff for us, right? Like you take something like quantum security, like we're already, been working on this for the last 6 months for our enterprise applications, right? They need to be PQC compliant and things like that. And then you just wake up and you go, hang on a second. Like we're doing this, and it's so valid for so many others. So this third pillar is really to look at, like, are there any of these opportunities? Now, we're not going to wake up tomorrow and say, like, we're going to go into pharmaceuticals or anything like that. But are there some of these opportunities, like, on the adjacencies that could be very viable to take to market as well? That's the kind of the third pillar. And the fourth, I would say, the horizontal layer is really a focus on real internal transformation. And I think, Shimi, taking over the CEO role, this is something he really embraced soup to nuts and said, hey, like, we need to be customer zero here. How do we transform completely internally to be fully agentic, right? We are one of the, bigger Cursor users in the world, for example, as a stat to put out there. The fight now is not how do we get our people, coding on Cursor and Codex and things like that. The battle now is, there's also this tokenization costs and things like that that you need to measure and balance and make sure that there's an ROI. By the way, it's a completely separate discussion we can have for 3 hours. It's a global problem people are looking at, and people need to grapple with, because your cost is not just your workforce. Your cost is your work labor plus your token cost for each employee, which is an interesting economic equation for most companies. And I'm sure you've seen the tweets and things like that of, companies like Uber just waking up and going, oh my gosh, like so we are, and that's another good example of something that we've built internally, right? Like having these dashboards per employee, what are they using, routing to cheapest LLMs, all of these is internal infrastructure we've built. We're like, hang on a second. This is like super valid outside, right? So back to that kind of how all of these pillars connect. That's back to pillar number three. So that, in a nutshell, that's our strategy. Absolutely, pillar one. We're doubling down on that. We think there's an amazing opportunity. Like there's this LLA deal that we signed or announced last quarter. It's an agentic transformation journey, and we are starting to see, and I know you and I have had a lot of conversations about the many POCs we're doing. We're starting to see these, like, our customers go, okay, it's not about can I launch an agent to production? Because yes, you can launch an agent to production. How do I transform my company? How do I have Who are the two to three partners that I want to partner with that will take me down this journey? And this is where we think there's a sweet spot for Amdocs to really play and make an impact and really set the stage for the next, 5, 6, 7 years.
Well, Anthony, I mean, the opportunity is obviously huge, right? The telcos are still very, very, very inefficient, in many ways. I mean, AI, it seems like made to order to massively improve the quality of the service, customer care, right? And frankly, their own cost structure. I mean, they can automate and agentize their entire business over time. And you guys are in an incredibly strong, position to do so. I guess the multi-billion dollar question is, are you gonna can you execute, or are you gonna lose these customers to new competitors, right? I think that's the really, really important point. Like, why do you retain the customers, and why what gives you confidence that you can execute?
Without being flippant, I would say we are the adult in the room in a way, okay? And when I, what I mean by that is you have a mission critical, in some cases with our big customers, 100 plus billion dollar business. And you are not going to wake up tomorrow and someone that great, amazing to see these amazing valuations, the company in dollars getting a $1 billion valuation. I also want that, right? But on the other hand, do you trust your entire business here to something like that, right? And so if you can get both, meaning if you can get the responsible adult in the room who knows how to build mission critical software, right? I'll give you just a very, very simple anecdote just to illustrate something like this, right? So you have, let's say you pick this great platform that has a great agent and he's amazing and does all the fantastic things and fantastic. I'm going to get it. For whatever reason, let's say, Claude's not available or OpenAI is not available or a zone is going down. Are you going to tell your customers, oh, come back in 3 days? What happen if a model gets taken offline? What happen if you start to scale it and suddenly you realize that every one of your inbound calls are using, 20,000 tokens for each call. I mean, there are a lot of complexities that needs to be managed in a complex organization. And, we are thinking through every element of it because we understand the business. And that combined with knowing the workflows and the business processes and how you take a product from A all the way to provisioning on the network, right? It's one thing to say, hey, I can answer a customer care and do an upsell. It's another thing to know if you can provision it on the network and make sure it gets delivered in 24 hours. And so we when we come to the table, we're taking all of this into account. We're taking your entire gamut of security into account. We're taking your regulatory concerns into account. So I think, when we come to the table, it's not like, hey, look at this nice shiny little thing here. Do you want to use AI? It's really deeply thinking through your business. And one thing we found, by the way, in this kind of new strategy that we're rolling out is we don't have 10,000 customers in telco. There are 50, 70 customers that carry 75% of the revenue globally. And many of these customers need a very contextualized path versus, here's a box, take it, make sure it fits into your ecosystem. So I think all of those with kind of the deep understanding of where our customers are at puts us in a very, very good position. Also, the relationship we have with NVIDIA and AWS, it's not like we're just saying, hey, Amdocs can do everything. We're bringing these strategic partners to the table. We're working very, very deeply with them. It wasn't just me here at NVIDIA. It was our, R&D teams that flew in here. Today, it's actually an R&D day. They're sitting together with the R&D teams. We are giving feedback on what works, what doesn't work on some of the Nemotron models, right? It's like a to and fro. And so I think bringing all of these to the table, it's tough to find someone out there that does all of this for telecommunications.
Yeah, no,
And this
I
is our
completely
brand.
agree. It was just partially, we get asked by investors, why should you guys win in this, right? I mean, obviously you got to execute. You need a lot of AI skill
100%.
sets that are very, very new, but it's like you're game to lose at this point, right? As long as you can execute. And I guess in that I was just interviewing. I just had a fireside chat with Verizon's head of the business unit right before this, Kyle Malady, and he basically said a bunch of the same things. You're saying what they need to develop. They need like an AI platform that will help customers manage their token utilization, token costs, model utilization. Which models to use. Integrated with data and everything you're talking about, right? And they would love to have, for lack of a better word, like an AI platform in a box, and it would seem like you have obviously 1,000 customers around the world. They're not all going to develop this on their own. You seem like perfectly well positioned to develop exactly this product that they want. And I guess in that point, do you have a product like that? Yeah.
And so one is the product, and we are continuing to push the boundaries on our kind of our BSS OSS stack around AOS and making it fully agentic. The second is also the harness. Think about the harness, right? Like, and this becomes, in a way, it's even like a bigger focus today. So you just spoke about all of the different models, right? I guarantee you, if you have, you're a company like Verizon or Amdocs or whoever, and you allow your employees all the tools to do dev and stuff like that, everyone's gonna default to Fable. You don't need to, okay? So how do you manage this? So now you have a LLM router that analyzes tasks and says, here are the tasks that can go to Sonnet or something like that, or maybe even an open source model, right? And then balance it across the organization. And we haven't even gotten to, we're working on a bunch of kind of open weight models, right? Because this is, by the way, this is the next big issue that's going to hit us, right? When you're an enterprise, and people mix the words open source and open weight, and they're not
Yeah,
necessarily the
I
same
use
thing.
open source just because I'm lazy, I guess. Yeah.
But it's two, by the way, two very, very important paradigms, right? But they're not necessarily exactly the same, right? You can have an open source model that's not open weight, right? And you can have a proprietary model that's open weight. Meaning, let's talk about open weights for a second, right? If you are using a model and you are an enterprise and you have all these non-deterministic software that's driving your business, you want to know where it's driving, how it's driving. You need the transparency, you need the observability. You are a regulated industry here, right? And so that's why open weights really, really matter in decision criteria. The open source element, is much more driven, I would say, by the cost factor of tokenization or token economics, if you like, as you start to scale. And our industries, I mean, the volumes, I mean, you know this, Tim, that the volumes in our industry is like second to none. And this is only, this is only increasing, right? And now you need to deal with not just employees coming in, but agents coming in. Right. So if you thought you had 50 customers, tomorrow you may have 140 customers because 70 of them or 80 of them or 90 of them will be an agent coming in trying to negotiate a deal and connect to your e-commerce server, right? And connecting via MCP and buying something and looking around. So like, who is thinking about that? We are, right? Like we are building stuff to have agent negotiations on the front end, because this is just around the corner. It's already happening today. And so you really
And
need
Anthony,
to
my
think of.
question was, I know you've built like this AI platform internally to kind of manage all the AI assets, right? And you're gonna and the telcos need to do that internally, but the telcos also want something for their enterprise customers, right? Because the enterprise customers are gonna need it. And they think based on everything you're saying, you gotta tie together networking, clearly, right? With the AI compute data centers, the actual GPUs, the models, the applications, the agents, it's all incredibly complicated, right? And then most importantly, you need privacy, security, data, on and on. Like, and it seems like you're developing it internally and you know how to deal with the telcos. I mean, do you think you can develop a product that the telcos can go to enterprises with and say, look, this will help manage all your AI assets?
Yeah, this is where I think, kind of connecting a little bit to pillar three, I think there is a great opportunity because what we're building is kind of agnostic in a way, right? I mean, you can easily white label, sell it to enterprises, and there is no issue with some of these because the enterprise are grappling with exactly the same problem, Talking about that model router, for example, right? Talking about, security, talking about harness, governance, all of these things, enterprises. So I think it's a great opportunity that our customers can take some of these components, white label it, and just expose it to their customers. And that's, in kind of pillar one, that's another, I would say. Now, it requires two to tango, right? Meaning it requires a customer to think bigger than just connectivity. Right. So like you're going to see future customers start to have bundles of, we already have customers talking to us about this, right? Bundles of like, here's my phone, here's my iPad, and you can have 10,000 tokens you can use a month, for example. Right. It could be across, frontier models, it could be their own hosted open source model. You can get like your own AI, personal AI agent. So here's kind of where the industry, I believe, is going to morph to on the consumer and even on the enterprise side. That niche of SMB to mid-market, I think, is one of the biggest opportunities that telecommunications providers have right now. Because
And it's a, I hadn't heard of that until just now, bundling tokens in, and it makes a lot of sense, right, Anthony? And you can bundle in many other products. But, the telcos had this, they were in a good position 15 years ago in cloud, right? They could have been the cloud providers for enterprise customers, and, they just didn't execute. I mean, I guess the question is, can they execute on this AI? Is there something different about AI that, unlike cloud, where they can, actually potentially execute a bit better?
And that's the, like the pessimistic view is, they were first to cloud, right? They were the whole OTT kind of thing that happened, where, the monetization really didn't flow as much onto the telco side and things like that. But at the end of the day, I think the most important thing to understand is none of those technologies could have come to bear without the pipes, without the connectivity. So I think at least that element is there, and that's not going to go away anytime soon. I think it is going to require some bravery from C-level within our customers, within CEOs, just going, hey, like, here's where I want to go, right? Not just kind of stay with the status quo and say, hey, I'm going to sell the next iPhone. Yes, you should sell the next iPhone, but like, what does that look like? And going back to the initial point where we started from, this is where I'm also excited about the opportunity around the mesh grid, around the edge. Because you think of the number of POPs that telcos have, right? We're not talking hundreds, we're talking tens of thousands in a city. And it's not just about the proximity to the enterprises or the consumers. It's just about the fact that you have all of these kilowatts of power sitting in these things that are unused, that are AC, that are powered, that already has the space secured.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what Verizon was talking about. I mean, everything you and I are talking about, we just had this entire conversation. And they were also talking about maybe selling or leasing GPUs as a service. Maybe they own it, maybe the enterprise owns it. But with cloud, the utilize one of the reasons I think enterprises outsource compute to cloud was the utilization internally of CPUs is fairly relatively low. I mean, if you're looking at AI, and you would know better than me because you're spending a ton of money on AI yourself, but you're running those things 24/7, I think, almost, right? Because and so why would you share that compute with somebody else when there's no economic rationale behind that? So and also enterprises, they want to control their data, right? They want to control their intellectual property. Privacy and security is absolutely paramount to everything we're doing here. So, I mean, I think there is a whole lot of reasons why the telcos can be very successful here and why you guys can, enable them to be successful. But, to your point, though, you need some brave leadership, right? And they got to really step up to the plate. I mean, Verizon now has a CEO that came from Silicon Valley, right? So, and he's already, had his career, in many ways. So, in a lot of ways, he's doing a lot of brave things because, it's, he doesn't have a lot of
It's an
personal downside,
opportunity.
and it's
Yeah,
opportunity.
it's definitely an opportunity. The only thing I would say, just to the initial comment you made, was, I think there is a bigger play than selling GPU as a service, right? GPU as a service, at the end of the day, is going to be a I don't want to say commodity because we're not there yet, but some type of commodity play, it's a cost plus exercise. But now, if you can start to go northbound and start to provide services, inferencing services, all sorts of things above it, that's really where the margin play and the opportunity is. It's not just saying, hey, I have a GPU, do you want to buy it, right?
No, you need the
Like,
whole
that's like,
platform of everything we're talking about. The
yeah, you need the
GPU as
whole
a service
platform. And I,
is one piece.
yeah, is one piece. So that's why I think, if you look at all of the SMBs and the mid-market companies around the place, these guys don't have a seat at the table with the NVIDIAs, right? I mean, they are the ones that are needing to, there is absolutely no doubt that every company out there in some shape or form is either embracing AI or wants to know how to do it. And so I think, as a telco, you are the first to the table, right? When a business opens, right? Think of the order. If I'm a SMB, I go and start a business tomorrow. Think of the order of what I would do, right? I would register my LLC. I would find a physical premise. I would connect the electricity and it would get connectivity. Like, that's literally the order of what I would do. And
Yes.
then all the other 10,000 things I need to do. Okay. So I think you're the first at the table. So when you are the first at the table, you have the most amazing opportunity to go, hey, like, have you thought about this? Like, we have this harness, very secured privacy, and you'll be coming to the table with the most amazing name in the industry, because people may say everything about telcos and write bad comments on social media or whatever, but they trust the telco at the end of the day. They're like, I know you're not going to wake up in the morning and decide to screw me, right? Like, this is not the brand that telcos have necessarily, right? So I
That's
think.
a great point. And I think just maybe if you can switch gears a little bit. Great deal
Yeah,
with
sure.
Liberty Latin America. They gave a number out, and I don't follow the company, of savings. But can you put, not just focused on them, but, if I was to entirely adopt AI, what kind of cost savings should a typical telco be able to see, do you think? I mean, all in, if I just went completely agentic. And I'm not holding you to this number, but I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
yeah. Yeah, look, I think there are two streams you need to look at in parallel. The first stream is, if I was going to wake up tomorrow and create a completely new telco, I would do it AI native from the ground up. And in a way that's easier to do because you don't have a legacy of systems and things that you need to bring along the journey, right? But most of our customers are on track two, meaning they are an existing company, they have an existing business, all of that stuff. So the ones that can push the needle in terms of savings are coming horizontally and going, look, let me completely reimagine how I'm going to do care. Let me completely reimagine how I'm going to do service in terms of truck rollouts and those layers, or even if you look at the network layers horizontally, if you start to kind of slice those out, and we are going from the perspective of selling, if I go even 3, 4 years and I look at the customer discussions, they were like, hey, we need like this functionality, this feature, we need charging to do this, things like that. The discussions we're having with customers now is, let's look at your business workflow end to end. Versus, bits and bytes and feature functionality. Let's look at your let's map out your customer workflow end to end. How do you now change this customer workflow? We have one customer. I'm not sure if we released the name, but we had one customer that came to us with a problem on the network side, and like, we were able to save in that particular space, we were able to save like 60% of their annual cost. Right. And this is something that they did and they have to do on a daily basis, right? And this was taken straight out of their annual operational cost. So
I believe it. And you guys had a big push 2 years ago, like trying to automate the contact centers a little bit more. Have you had much progress there? Are the telcos seeing results there?
yeah, I think the con so I think the contact center space, I think, is jumping in leaps. Right. So I think Yes, you will have, potentially a contact center and things like that. But I think what we are starting to see now is the customer care agent and most of the inquiries coming in, which is like 40 odd percent billing related, right? I mean, you can take not a haircut, like you can completely slice this by, a magnitude. Because most of these agentically, very contextually driving high NPS can be solved purely in an agentic manner.
And so you've
Right?
implemented that and had a lot of success, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, we're starting to see now customers are doing it by, so they're taking, instead of going, hey, we're doing all of care, they're like, hey, like let's do it on a, like we have one customer that started on a WhatsApp channel. So on the WhatsApp channel, all of the inbounds, and this is a customer in Europe, all of the inbounds coming in a WhatsApp channel, and in Europe they use WhatsApp a lot, so that's a very important channel for them. There were only 3% that needed human intervention. So 97% were being solved without any intervention or escalation. And that's that to me. Like I went back to my team. I'm like, hey, just double check this. Like, is this right? And
Wait,
they were
can
having.
we be clear about that? Sorry. Said another way, they were able to cut like 97% of their live human handling of problems.
And having it solved by just people chatting to an agent in the back end connected to WhatsApp, connected back to the system,
And were those
right?
humans running those chats or agents running those chats?
So it was a combination, it was a hybrid.
Okay.
So there was like originally on WhatsApp they had a like a standard chat bot that were doing it, but when the chat bot was doing it, like 60, 70% of the calls were like, ah, I need to talk to a person, like give me a human, like this is not the answer that I wanted. Versus now you're getting 96, 97% of those completely handled and people happy and moving on.
Oh, but it's a hybrid agent and live person.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
the live, no, but the live person is only 3% of all inbounds,
Oh, okay. Got it. Got it. So what you're saying
right?
is the agent has improved dramatically with these chats.
Yeah, so
Okay. Got it.
97% are being handled completely by an agent versus 3% are like, oh, I still need to talk to a person
Got
versus
it. Got it.
before 60% were.
And what was the big change? Is it just AI has gotten so much better?
Yeah, it's just inferencing, training, knowing kind of the path. I mean, this is just completely like think of the original WhatsApp launch that they had done was just like a standard AI, not even Gen AI. I think it was just a standard chatbot. And that was, fielding 30 to 40%, something like that. It was still, decent metrics. And now you've just accelerated that to fielding 97% using an agentic agent.
So, Anthony, I've gotten through about four of the 30 questions I wanted to ask you. So maybe yes. So maybe we can just be brief in this. I mean, are you seeing the hyperscalers as competitors, or are they getting more aggressive? Have you lost any customers to them or any business to them?
No, I they still continue to be partners of ours. Obviously the big three, we still work very, very closely. I was just in Seattle 3 weeks ago with AWS, had a great session with them. No, I mean we don't really see them as a direct competitor. It's just because we go so deep, right? Like we
Yeah, and how about the systems integrators, the Accentures of the world, or maybe even like the ServiceNow, Salesforces? Do you see them as competitors, or are they getting more aggressive?
No, I wouldn't say so. I would say, the kind of the competitive moat I would say is more around the internal IT space going, hey, we have this tool set, maybe we can build it. And they may try that path internally, and then they'll go, oh, maybe. And we've had several customers try to do stuff, and they go, oh, maybe we can accelerate even faster if we bring Amdocs with us, and we will still build some stuff. But so I would say,
Well, that
yes,
was
some.
my next question. And yeah, I mean, for them to build this in-house would be a total disaster, right? So I would just my words, it makes like perfect
But
sense.
doesn't stop them trying, right?
Yeah, they're going to try. But and I guess yes, even in that regard, I mean, how do you get your own AI people and skill set? How do you keep those people to be able to build the tools that you kind of need right now, right? I mean, they're in demand.
Yeah, it's a tough one. You know, we have a very strategic geographically kind of spread company, right? So the US, Israel, Cyprus, Philippines, India. So we are not always coming to like one market, and it's not the same market. And I think that really helps us a lot. And you know, people come along the mission, right? You join Amdocs, you know, you're on a mission to save the world. I mean, you're signing up for that. So I think there's a lot of different factors that kind of play into this. There's no magic at the end of the day, right? I mean, it's a tough skill set, tough market out there. And by the way, the training that you get, the experience that you get is bar none in Amdocs, right? Like, we default, you're coming in, you're not working with AI, you're not working at all. Right, from marketing to legal to HR. Tell you one funny thing. I just got an email this morning from one of the HR leads going, "Hey, we built this amazing system that does all of this stuff in HR. Do you think that there's a marketing, you know, can we like take this to market?" Like, that's the mentality in the company. We have nothing to do with building HR systems, right? But every unit within the company, like, this is the focus and this is the mind. And this is really, you know, Shimi as the new CEO, this is really what he's driving through the entire organization.
Oh, that's really it's really really exciting stuff. Well, and I guess in that regard, I mean, do you think yourselves it's a major productivity improvement? I mean, is it something that can move the needle in margins? Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think, definitely, I think on the dev side, I think the one thing we are cautious to do is, you know, we need to have complete transparency in what we build, what it does, because when it goes out to the field, it goes into mission critical systems. So this is not just a, you know, vibe coding Angry Birds and put it on the App Store, right? Like, so every step that we do, we are making sure there's human in the loop in terms of, you know, the quality, the code checks. But definitely, you know, this pace is accelerating fast. We think, you know, here's the exciting part, right? Like, we think productivity wise, what we could have done, don't just think of it from, hey, like, you can do A and now you're going to have much more margins. Maybe we can deliver A, B, C, and D to the customer. So, you know, look out for new areas we might go into, you know, expanding kind of our addressable market, giving them more value, because, you know, our customers also have access to these tools, right? So they are expecting more, they're expecting more productivity. You know, it's not like Amdocs is the only one that has this.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. And can you talk about your just on the compute side? I'm kind of asking everybody. It seems like there's a mad dash to get more GPU compute. You know, prices are going up. And you know, it's very, very hard for companies like yourself to control your token costs, right? Can you get the GPUs that you need to run your business? And can you talk a little bit about, you know, has it hurt margins? Has it hurt expenses? Yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, we have great relationships directly with NVIDIA, you know, with every level from the top all the way down. So I think we are good from that space. We were actually talking about, you know, looking at going much more hybrid in terms of, you know, frontier versus on-prem, and reutilizing some of the NVIDIA GPUs and things like that. So we haven't hit that bottleneck from scarcity that we don't have access to the GPUs yet. But I think from the cost perspective, we need to keep an eye out on our employee base, obviously, because it's very, very easy for, you know, Anthony to turn up and, you know, suddenly consume, you know, seven different AI apps and just drive this cost number. So we are putting, obviously, controls in place, metrics in place. We can now monitor every employee and their usage. I actually saw a dashboard yesterday and I was like, "Ah, I wonder what this person's doing." You know, so you can, you know, probably got a call from Shimi and got a call from me going, "Hey, what are you working on?" You know, so you need to balance this, right? Because you want to drive,
It better be
you want to drive AI. On the other hand, you also want to make sure there's an ROI to whatever they're doing and they're not building Angry Birds.
Well, I know I asked you a lot of questions that Matt didn't appreciate, but you did very good answering them all. And but we're out of time, Anthony. And you know I could talk to you for another hour. And
I'm here. You know where to find me.
Yeah, I'd love to go see you in Texas in person.
Yeah, love to. We
and see what's
can do.
going
Maybe we
on.
can do a podcast on all things AI.
We can. Matt, thank you for lending Anthony to me. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Thanks, Tim.
Bye.
Bye, guys.